Welcome to the CEN Show, the voice of the world community. Recently, Tori Bailey, a collaborator with our organization, Community Education Network, won an award from the organization Parent Action Coalition for Education. The acronym is PACE. So I'd like to share a video of her and also another recipient of the award. And I think it's very significant that we hear this. So let me share it. Let me make sure I have the volume on. Okay, good, it's there.
Helping youth with their academics through the pandemic and beyond. Please welcome Frejenay, an extraordinary lyricist, actor, and all-around entertainer who is letting her light shine in the entertainment industry with the confidence as a veteran who has been performing since the age of 14 to perform at this year's 2022 Glory Awards. Frejenay is pursuing her lifelong goal of creating a school that offers performing arts lessons to underserved youth. This 2012 graduate with a BA in Theater Arts and Dance from California State University, Los Angeles, is shining a light on hate on a lyrical message of Black privilege.
Hello, I'm Frejenay. I'm from South Los Angeles, and this piece is titled Black Privilege. I remember there being a meme going around asking something to the effect of if there was anything considered Black privilege. Someone sarcastically responded that Black privilege embodies random white people always minding your business, other races claiming there is no racism because you're on their friends list, being followed while you shop in the store scared to reach for your checklist, getting pulled over for nothing but still receiving a ticket for giving too much lip. Black privilege is being drafted into wars to fight for freedom. Freedom you don't even get to experience, praying to God for your enemies and waiting for their deliverance. Black privilege is being told you're ugly while others emulate your appearance. Black privilege is embodying resiliency and perseverance. Black privilege is building a nation and still being considered a second-class citizen. Imagine building a house from its foundation and can't even live in it. It's constantly contributing to science and medicine and often not being credited. So many inventions over the years without the right to get them patented. Black privilege is seeming to work twice as hard to get half as far. Black privilege is driving something nice and the cops thinking it's a stolen car. It's having a neighborhood full of liquor stores met with opposition when you apply for your liquor license for your bar. It's having beautifully melanated skin being compared to that of tar. Black privilege is hunger. Black privilege is poverty. Black privilege is discrimination. Black privilege is a novelty. Black privilege is being treated as a peasant, but knowing that you are king. Black privilege is being met with opposition for almost everything. It's the fact that not only we are discriminated against by our white counterparts, it's the fact that other nations of color look at you as if you aren't smart. The joke essentially was that black privilege equates to racial discrimination, which is an utter shame because we built this dear nation. All in all, I'm certain that my melanin is heaven sent, and I am sure there is beauty in this black experience.
Tori Bailey is receiving the 2022 Glory Award for shining her light on the plight of homelessness and especially the policies and procedures being followed for housing the homeless. She has been diligent as a community activist and has political prowess. She's a recognizable representative in the Los Angeles community, and she has made a difference for helping the helplessness and the homeless. And for that, we, Parent Action Coalition for Education, PACE, we honor you with the Glory Award for your great works.
Thank you to PACE for acknowledging me for this wonderful Glory Award. PACE is a no-nonsense newspaper that brings information to the community as well as education. And it's just such a wonderful paper to follow. I've been following it for a while. It's been since 1995, I believe. And so I continue to keep everyone abreast in the community of everything that I'm doing to help others and advocate for the people, the community conduit. Again, I'd like to say thank you, PACE, for acknowledging me and the work that I'm doing in the community. Thank you.
Dr. Thorne.
Okay, so that was one of our collaborators, Tori Bailey, and the other young lady. I thought that poem was so excellent, I wanted to share it. So that's congratulations to all of those recipients of those awards. I am your host, Roski Mascani, and I'd like to introduce the panel. We have Professor Amin Ra. We have Ms. Linda Shorter, our brother Mashinda, and we have Brother Hembrick coming in, and then we have Sister Make It Happen, Ms. Shabazz. So welcome everybody. Thanks for being here. Tonight's guest is Chris Shepherd, and the topic is Job Corps. I met Chris over 30 years ago at Long Beach State, and he's one of the coolest people I've ever met. He's one of the youngest DJs at the radio station, KLON, now it's called KJazz, 88.1 FM. Good evening, Brother Chris. How are you? Tell us some things about yourself, and please begin your presentation.
Okay. Hey, thanks a lot. And you know, thanks for inviting me to this platform to share something that I think is very important to, you know, the Black and Brown community in general, that furthers education and vocational skills training in the Job Corps program and the cost that's associated with it. And we'll get into that in the presentation. As far as the background is concerned, that's part of the presentation, so I'm going to bring that up. Okay, I'm going to share my screen. I hope all this stuff works out well. All right, let's see here. This is what I'm going to get into right here. Let me shift this. And I'm going to present it in this format. And let's hopefully this will click in right now. Okay, here we go. Job Corps, operated by the Department of Labor, Employment and Training Administration. Chris Shepherd here. Currently, I'm employed with by the Job Corps program with the federal government. We oversee Job Corps programs in the San Francisco region, which covers Alaska, Hawaii, Seattle, Washington, Sierra Nevada, Arizona, all of California, and Idaho. Yeah, I think I got them all in there. So we have programs in all those different states. A little bit of background about myself. I went to Centennial High School, over in Compton, California, where Mr. Professor Amin Ra went, and Rigo as well is teaching there, which is great. Love to hear about that. Continued on to California State University of Long Beach and majored in Black Studies, where I met Professor Amin Ra. And actually, while I haven't told you this, but some of those classes that, not only classes that I took, it was the after school programs that you used to involve us with at Compton College with De Silva.
Yeah.
And we used to go tutor those kids. You know, that's how like my Job Corps career got started right there, believe it or not.
Okay.
Yeah. So I did my Black Studies undergraduate and went to graduate school as I gotten hired by the federal, not by the federal government yet, but by a Job Corps program. I was working at a couple of Job Corps programs and I got this one and they talked about this federal fellowship program at Minot State University, where I got a degree in executive business. management, and it was a nice program, very nice program. As the host said, you know, I worked at the jazz station on campus, FM 88.1 KLON. Had a magnificent time there, met a lot of great people on campus. I was still a student and, you know, met the staff there. They were great. Met this lady from Europe. She came in and she started a Eurojazz radio station. So I had the opportunity to be sponsored by Heineken. I was flying to Europe during the summers, staying in Amsterdam and the Netherlands. I was going to jazz concerts, North Sea jazz festivals, emceeing some of the concerts. Had a great time. All that had came to an end when I left Long Beach State and I got into the Job Corps programs. And I started out the Los Angeles Job Corps, which is downtown LA. Moved from there to the Treasure Island Job Corps in San Francisco on that island that in between San Francisco and Oakland. There's an island right there, and they have a Job Corps center on it. And then I had to come back home to Long Beach and participate in that program, which was very interesting, which was very good. And that was the Long Beach Job Corps program. And now here I am, currently with the Department of Labor, Employment and Training Administration, Office of Job Corps as a contracting officer representative. And with that being said, Job Corps is a process. And I'm going to go over some of my responsibilities. So as we get into the process, you'll see how important those responsibilities are. And that's why I wanted to cover them. So my roles and authority, as it stands right now, I have oversight of the region's share of a $1.7 billion national federally funded program, okay, in education and vocational skills training. And the program offers so much in this process. I serve as the active participant on acquisition workforce panels for goods and services. It's targeted towards the audience to accomplish, it gets accomplished through a procurement activity. So on this panel that I serve on, we actually put out requests for proposals, interested parties send them in, and this is more of the contracting aspect. And we go through the proposals, determine who we're going to select to actually run a program. Let's see, I got to kind of move these around so I can see my slides. Back up here. Okay. I monitor high-risk firm fixed price with price adjustment contracts, communicate process improvement plans to support academic and vocational success governed by an objective federal outcome measurement system. We call it OMS. And that system measures how many high school diplomas, how many job training matches, TAFE gains. It measures a lot of different information that the Job Corps program accomplished. And they do it region by region. And then there's a national summary of all the different regions involved. So this information is tracked, it's pooled, and is definitely monitored for additional funding if needed. I serve as the federal government's quality assurance oversight delegate, ensuring corrective action plans are developed, executed to improve accountability, deliverables, and performance. Again, a lot of responsibility, specifically the finances. When it comes down to the actual career technical training and the other aspects of the program, it goes by a whole different measuring system. So I serve as the technical liaison between the contractor and the contracting officer. And that's why I'm the contracting officer representative. And I have authority and responsibility over all aspects of the contract, except changing the terms or conditions and obligating the government. Now, the terms and conditions can only be changed through what they call a modification process. There's bilateral and unilateral modification processes in that contract environment. There's no handshakes, there's no emails, there's no I got you. If you don't have a contract modification and you're working outside the guidelines of your contract, that can equal trouble. As far as obligating the government, like I said, I have to monitor my share of the 1.7, but you have to have a system to do that, because what happens is that OFA, Office of Finance and Accounting, will call you. I've received calls from Office of Finance and Accounting. Shepard, where are we at this point, 6 months, 7 months, year, 2 years into this five-year contract with the funds on a particular contract? And you have to know that information. So you have to develop systems in order to really know what you're doing to stay on top of your game. It's a great process. So I wanted to introduce that information to you, because as we get into how this all works, you'll see why it's so important. A little bit of background about Job Corps. It's been around since 1964 under the Lyndon B. Johnson administration, and it was expanded to the economic and social opportunities for Americans, specifically for minorities and the poor at that time, and it still is for the most part. There's 120 Job Corps programs throughout the United States. The platform and architect is to work with educational and vocational programs in the community. Educational and vocational programs in the community. So if a Job Corps program is in your community, it is designed to work with the community. That's very important. And that's some of the information we look for as we read through those proposals that come to our office. It's the largest nationwide residential career training program in the country. Now, there's a non-residential aspect and there's a residential aspect. So you can live on the center's campus. You can live at the college campus, okay? So you can stay there or you can commute back and forth from home. It's just like a college, a university with dorms. It's for ages from 16 to 24. You can complete your high school diploma there. You can train for a meaningful career, and they will assist you in obtaining employment. Now, this last bullet here talks about 2 million individuals have been served since 1964. And I wish I had the data on what fields those individuals went to. Now, I know George Foreman is a big Job Corps guy, and we all know who he is and where he is and what he does. I think he was at the Timberlake Job Corps Center, and that's in our region in Oregon, because we have Oregon as well. Now, Job Corps offers career technical skills and training in 10 high-growth industry sectors. Here they are right here. Healthcare is a major one. Hospitality, COVID kind of kicked that back a little bit, but it's coming back on strong. IT is always hot. You have the hard trades with advanced manufacturing, automotive, and construction. Those are hot trades. Kids come in there. They earn their certification in these programs. Transportation, telecommunication unit and transportation, they're always hiring. That's an advanced training program. So you go to one of those programs, you're bound to be hired. They're going to place you into a very nice career at 18, 19, and 20 years old where you can move and advance. So students can earn a high school diploma or the equivalent and college credits. Okay, we're going to get into some of that too. It offers tuition-free housing, meals, basic health care, a living allowance, and career transition assistance. So it offers a whole lot for a 16, 17, and 18-year-old up to 24. Now, some of these kids they say, well, I'm not for high school. High school's not for me. It's not going fast enough. This type of program will speed things up for you, and it's self-paced. It's self-paced. So if you have enough, energy to put forth the full court press in a short period of time, that's your self-pace. If you need to slow down a little bit, some things are going on that you don't understand, that's your self-pace. So you have that type of body or framework to work in the program. There's five phases to the process. Five phases. Outreach and mission, career preparation, career development, which is kind of like the meat and potatoes, career transition, and then into your career. Five phases. Now, of course, things happen in those five phases. So phase one, all right, outreach and admission. Where can I find information on the program? Of course, we have a website. Of course, you can find it online. But here are some physical places that the outreach part of the program goes into the community and try to set up shop at some of these locations. So when kids visit, they can provide them information. So they call them one-stop shops, any type of community fairs or job fairs or fairgrounds for the most part. You have to have high school relationships. My thing, I would, if I was a contractor, I would treat this like recruiting athletes. Okay, I would go to the high schools that are in our community, and I would talk to the counselors, and I would get a percentage, get a number of kids who are college bound, who may not have the means, who are going to the military. I would just get some numbers, and then I would work with the school and those kids, and then I would introduce this program to them to let them know all the opportunities they still have that they can get into, finish their education, earn a certification, and become employed in a career that you can advance in. So various community outreach programs, you know, the outreach part of the program is designed to connect with these entities right now. In that outreach process, you have to meet some requirements. You know, we have some requirements, okay? And they're not tough requirements, but they're strong requirements. You have to be a U.S. citizen with no felons, of course. Of course, be between the ages of 16 and 24 and meet the socioeconomical requirements. So that right there tells you that the program is geared toward, is really geared toward, you know, getting those kids who just may not have the means, but, you know, but have a real strong ambition and want to achieve. And if they don't have a real strong ambition, you know, through conversation, they can develop that. And we can bring them into the program and get them started with the type of coaching that we provide them. You have to have your documents together, medical records.
Excuse me.
Yeah.
Excuse me, Brother Chris. Can you go back to meet socioeconomical requirements, kind of elaborate on that?
Okay. Yeah. So you have to fall in. You can't be living in Palos Verdes or Beverly Hills. Okay. So you have to be in a socioeconomical environment in your family means. So if you're over a certain threshold that by these social economical guidelines that you have the means to do things, you know, then you may not qualify for the program. However, though, let's say you are on your own, you're an individual on your own, you're 21 years and on your own, right? So now you're self-proclaiming and you can be eligible for the program. That kind of clears it up a little bit?
Yes, that's good.
And here's a perfect example. I had a kid call my office, and this kid, and he was going to the Oregon program, right? He was going to Tongue Point Job Corps in Oregon, and they have a seamanship program, right? So he called me up, you know, Mr. Shepherd, yeah, I got terminated. You know, I'm trying to get back into the program. The termination wasn't a good termination. And so when I'll get in that too, that zero tolerance process, but I want to tell the story because you mentioned social economics. This kid, make a long story short, he was let back into the program because it was a wrongful termination for something they couldn't prove that he did, and the evidence didn't add up to him doing it until they searched the cameras later on, then they found out what happened. However, I said, where do you live? And he told me where he lived. He not knowing I'm from LA, right? He's telling me all these environments. I said, well, how did you get involved in Job Corps, right? He said his grandfather was a merchant marine or something like that. And at that time, you know, his grandfather had put things in a trust for him and his family, right? And he and his mother weren't doing real good, but that trust kind of gave him a place to stay, right? Gave them a place to stay. And he told me the address. And I said, that's Rancho Palos Verdes. I said, what are you doing with the program? You know? And then he gave me the story about his background, his mother. And if it wasn't for his grandfather setting up that trust and having that, all that property just paid for so they can just live there, then it would have been a different story for him. So he just had an address, but his economics weren't in line with his address. So he was one that stayed in the program and did well. So with that being said, medical records, education records, including any type of learning disabilities, because people in the program are there to help with that process, and you definitely have to know who you are. So your identification, and you have to have a solid identification that explains who you are, picture, Social Security, birth certificate. There's a whole process for that. And we have a team of people that check the backgrounds of all participants to make sure they are who they say they are. You're assigned an admission counselor. And this is where things get good. Things get good. So you make it up to this point, things have gotten really good. They're going to start assisting you with your career guidance. Okay. And once they start that process, you're kind of like on your way. You're going to select your program, which Job Corps Center you want to go to. That's based upon your career technical training program that you want to take. You're going to receive an arrival date. You're going to receive an arrival date. And you'll be on your way to your program. Now, that's through outreach and admission. And then we get into career preparation. Career preparation. Now, you got all your paperwork, got your arrival date, your why, you're on site now, and you're a residential student. Now you got to go through your career preparation process, which is going to be 4 to 6 weeks long. First thing you do, you're going to meet the folks who came in with you, and you're going to be assigned a residential room. You may be assigned that room prior to your arrival. Okay. You're going to have a bank account established for you doing CPP. That's because they receive a stipend pay. And instead of the government giving the kids a check or cash like they used to do, it's all sent rather to their bank account now. So kids have a debit card. So they're starting a little credit building process. You're going to meet with management staff, and they're going to go over the rules and guidelines, and they're going to discuss the ZT policy. Rules and guidelines, you know, that always seems to get people caught up, but you have to know how to operate within the program and knowing who the people are. And with, you know, top management coming to talk to you, they understand that, you know, okay, this is pretty serious. You know, we don't have just line staff in here. We have the directors coming in, managers coming in, letting us know about the program. Doing career preparation, you're going to go through academic TABE testing. You know, if you come in with a high school diploma, you'll still be tested, but, you know, they need to know where you stand. You're going to explore the careers, you know, you're going to explore the careers. So you're going to visit each career technical training program that the center offers. Is it on center or off center? You're going to visit them all. And those were those 10 high industry vocational skills training programs that we went through. Those are just some of them. You're going to develop a personal career development plan, which is now called the Pathway to Achieving Career Excellence. And this is where the rubber kind of meets the road with your direction. Each kid is going to go through this process. And after they figure out what direction they want to go in, which was already discussed during the outreach and admission part, now we're going to document it thoroughly in the program so everyone here can pull it up in the system and know what direction you're headed in. So if I have to go see a staff member, that staff member can pull me up on their computer and see what's going on with me. If I'm talking to my career counselor and I want to change the process, that happens later on in career development, or it can happen now if you change your process during career preparation, which would be more advantageous. That information, once you go through that process, you're going to complete what they call a pathway achievement record. Now, that pathway achievement record has benchmarks. Remember, this is self-paced. So if those benchmarks have to change, it's not a problem. They can change. The objective is to get you through the program with all the assistance that you need to get that done. In career preparation, you're going to be assigned your career counselor. And that's going to be very important because that's the person that you're going to be going to receive direction from if you have any questions. It's your career counselor. And after that, you're going to be transitioning to the next phase of the program, which is phase three, which is from career preparation to career development. In each transitional phase, you meet with a panel to discuss your transition. Now, in career development, you're going to be in this part of the phase for at least 7 months up, depending on the career technical training program that you sign up for, right? You're going to meet with your career counselor and panel every 60 days to make sure you're on track. Remember, self-pay. So if something's not happening, we need to find out why. We need to set some short-term goals to reach that long-term. We can do that in a discussion in those panels. And that's where that PAR comes in, to ensure you're making those goals. You're going to be assigned to your academics or your career technical program. I'm both doing your career development stage because you've already discussed that in your career preparation. So you're going to be assigned to that now. Now, while you're in this part of the program and you're going through, let's say you're going through, I don't know, airline mechanics or something. They offer that training program over at the Texas region. And you can work, you can participate in a work-based learning program off-center as geared towards your training program. And while you're participating over there, of course, those are skills gained. If they have a pre-apprenticeship program, you can qualify for that. And of course, these are resume building skills, hands-on resume building skills along the way. So that's called a work-based learning. And like for office administration training program, you can do that on center because there's a lot of office administration things taking place on center. If you're in facility maintenance or HBI, Home Builders Institute, there's all type of construction programs taking place on center that you can participate in as well for work-based learning. So in that process, you're going to earn a recognized industry certification that's related to your career pathway. We try to get everyone to get their OSHA certification because it's kind of universal for safety. And it's good to have that on your resume as well. As you go through this process in these seven plus months, you have an opportunity to transfer to an advanced training program. I think I want to transfer colleges now. Transferring colleges. So that's an advanced training program. Let's say I completed CNA or LVN at this program. And now I think I want to go do a x-ray technician program at another job that's offered at another job force center, right? So I get to transfer to that advanced training program to another job force center. Now the advanced career training is college, the straight college. And we know that junior college, you can go there free, but there's still cost behind it. Whatever you decide to do here, there's no cost associated with you. The cost is associated with the program. All this, the cost is associated with the program, not the person that's participating in the program. Okay, so you've gone through all that now through your career development, your seven plus months, whatever your career that you selected, you're doing well in it. You're advancing in it. You conducted some work-based learning. You got some hands-on experience. You've been building your resume. You know, you did labor market information during CPP. So that's going to be introduced to you again when it comes to your transition stages. So nothing is going to be new. I've been meeting every 60 days with my career panel. They've been directing me on what direction I need to go in order to get all this done. I ran into some roadblocks. I met with my career panel. Okay, every 60 days, we handled those roadblocks. I'm feeling pretty good right now. I'm feeling really good. So I achieved my certifications. I earned my certificate in my career development training program. I'm feeling good, you know. So I need to make a decision. Do I want to do an advanced training or do I want to go into advanced career training into the college educational program? So after I make all those decisions at the end of the day, I'm going to meet with my transition panel from career development to career transition. Now, I'm polishing up things. I'm reviewing the labor market information, discussing my transitional needs. Do I need housing? You know, do I need transportation? Do I need a roommate? Do I need a driver's license? Because we take care of the driver's license while you're in the program as well. In here, you would conduct some mock interviews as well as real interviews because employees come up to the program wanting to hire. So if you've been doing a work-based learning, 10 students that's been doing a work-based learning program at their location, they're going to send some people out to do some interviews. Again, this is based upon the strong relationship that management of the program has with the community. You see, can't leave that community part out of it because that's what drives the whole process. And then you go into your arrangements, you know, your transitional pay. We're gonna pay you for transitioning out of the program. And if you have unspent funds from your clothing allowances that we've been providing you to purchase interview type clothing with, job clothing with. If you have any balances of that, you're going to be provided all that in your transitional paycheck. So you're going to have a balanced payout for the most part. So we went through the whole program, and this is like a high-level snapshot of what we do. There's a lot of details in there on what's going on. But once you get down to that career development and that career transition, you're ready to transition into your career. Now you've been hired, you're working somewhere, you become a tax-paying citizen. The company that hires you because you're coming out of Job Corps, they give that organization a tax break. So the more Job Corps students you hire in the organization, the more tax breaks you receive in your organization. So it's a great program, ages 16 to 24. It's like a college program for the most part because you get to live there, you get to eat there, you see your wellness, but you get wellness provisions there. You have a counselor that's guiding you through the process along the way. You have a documented academic par that you have to meet your milestones on. And if you do not, you're going to go see your panel members, and they're going to help you along the way. You can talk to any staff member because we have the centralized computer system that can bring you up for that staff member. They can see where you are, what you accomplished. It's a very robust computer system with tons of information in there on the student and where they are in the program. So that covers it for the most part. We have a website, www.jobcorps.gov. You can check that out and find out some more information about the program because you can actually apply online as well. Rio, that's what I got.
That's excellent. So we're gonna go around to the panel.
Oh, okay.
So we'll start with the ladies first. So we'll go with Linda, Sister Linda. Hello, you're on mute.
I'm here. I was trying to write all these notes.
Okay, you have any comments or questions for Chris?
No, but Chris, I'm glad you talked about Job Corps this evening. Job Corps has passed tremendously. I'm loving it.
Yeah.
Because I was back there almost 25 years ago.
Okay. You attended one of the Job Corps programs?
No, actually, I worked for Job Corps. I was a work experience coordinator.
Oh, okay.
Under Mr. Coleman. And we didn't have any of the levels that you talked about. So I'm so glad it's moving on up. Loving it.
Yeah. Now, what Job Corps program did you work at?
It was in Los Angeles. Under his name was Mr. Coleman and Vance Coleman, I think.
Vance Coleman. And
so it's been a minute.
Okay, what year was it?
Mr. Coleman.
I could tell you later. I have to think about it. Oh. I was so interested in everything you were saying. How much is it, Vance?
Oh yeah.
And I guarantee it was over 25 years ago.
Okay.
But it was nothing compared to what you said. Nothing.
Yeah, and I've been in it long enough to see the evolution of the program. You know, because I came into the program. I think it was 92.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, that's when I came in. I came in 92. So I've been in it ever since, on the center level and now on the government side. So mm-hmm. I seen the policies and procedures change. Mm-hmm. And that's why I wanted to go with that part of my roles and authorities because,
Okay. Yes, I only have one quick question because I'm in Florida and there's a job for here.
Yep.
Now, so is it all separate entities? Or are they all under the same federal umbrella?
They're under the same federal umbrella, that $1.7 billion, but they have different operators. When they go through that procurement process, I spoke a little bit about the procurement process.
Right. And also you mentioned the RFP that you have coming out. So would each entity have one access to those funds available?
Yeah, the way it works is for the contracting side, which is a whole nother program. We want to do that. But on the contracting side, contracts are awarded 2 base years, 3 option years.
Mm-hmm.
And during the last option years, during 3 months into the last option year, that's mm-hmm. when information will go out about the RFP, about what's okay. coming up, about that okay. job. You have to be registered with the federal government websites to receive this type of information automatically.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. Wow.
You're welcome.
All right, thanks for the question. Sister, make it happen.
Greetings, family.
Greetings, Abani Ghani.
Greetings, Abani Ghani, to everyone. This was a great presentation, just like all of our presentations. Linda's presentation was amazing. This is a great presentation with some great information. I'm an educator myself, work with the panel. I'm a career specialist. Career counseling is one of my specialties. And so I'm really excited to hear about Job Corps. When I was at the high school level for 22 years, I partnered up very much so with Job Corps. And so I'm hoping that those relationships in Compton Unified are continuing, and that you, your program, the Long Beach and the LA, that they are having access to the students at the high school level, because this is a great option, since a good number of our students will need that support as they transition from high school into the world of work. So again, I am thankful for your time and your wealth of knowledge and your information. And my question would be, are you aware if there is a pipeline or a connection or a partnership that Compton Unified currently has in place now that they have this college-going culture and these college and career centers? Have your program been invited to partner up and re-engage with Compton Unified School District?
Okay, well, that's a good question. I can say from my seat, I can say that it is the contractor's responsibility, because I kept harping on community, to go out into that community, Compton in this case, and partner with those organizations to let them know about the program in order to reach the kids in the program so they can come into the program. Now, I can tell you from the proposals that I have read, they talk about that. Talking about it is one thing, but you got to be about it. Because I can talk to Rico, I can talk to DeAnthony, I can talk to Armin Rock, I can probably talk to everybody on this call and recruit 5 kids apiece, right? Right now, there's an issue. You know, there's an issue with contractors bringing kids in, and I don't know why. I really don't know why. It's called OBS, Onboard Strength. And each contract is signed, right, saying that they will meet these deliverables. And the onboard strength is the number of kids you have in the program. Okay, they call it OBS. And people are jumping out of their seats when they get 5 kids. And I know from this call right now, I can probably get 5 kids from each of them right off the bat. Right off the bat. Of those 5, at least 3 are joined. At least. So that's my heartburn right there with the process. And I hope I answered your question as far as their relationships and what they should be doing as opposed to what they wrote down on a piece of paper and said they're going to do. You know, we have to get out there. And I'm not over that Long Beach contract. I wish I was. I wish I was over that LA contract, because, you know, I'll be able to do more with those contracts. You see, they have a core in our office that they have to answer to and with. And I'm pretty sure they're doing a good job with them. However, though, you know, I think more can be done in this outreach and admission process. So I hope, based upon their proposal and what they said they're going to do, I really hope that they're out there in the community like that. I really do.
And I have another follow-up question to that. So is it open for families or students to just kind of self-refer? Do they have to come from their school counselor?
Mm-mm. No, they don't have to. They can go online, apply online. .gov.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
All right, thanks a lot. The real Ron D'Anthony Langston.
Can you repeat the age group again?
It's my turn.
Yeah, the age group is 16 to 24.
Okay, D'Anthony, you're on.
How you doing? How you doing, Mr. Shepherd?
Very well, Mr. Langston. How are you?
Okay, all right. So for the panel, I'm the workforce manager of HLS, Human Learning Systems. And they have 6 contracts in Portland, Tucson, Shreveport, Detroit, and Iowa. So that's their, and they have 2 up in Portland right there. So that's the 6-7. Always start Job Corps with like, and I started working there I did 8 years in downtown LA. Previous to this year right here before I came to the corporate office. But I always thought Job Corps was a place like Reform School. I just really did. So when Chris recommended I go down there to work down there, I was totally shocked. I was like, wow, this is Job Corps? I mean, it just blew me away. I mean, you have a counselor, you have medical, you know, you have everything support right there if you want to succeed. You don't want to be at home. They got great dormitories. It's like a brand new building down there. Like most of the Job Corps that I've been to, their living quarters are incredible. And their food is incredible. You know, so the student government, I was over recreation and student government. So I partnered up with like USC, UCLA, Lakers, Clippers, Rams, you know, all type of programs, you know, BET awards, you know, I went above and beyond to really give the kids an experience through my relationships, you know, and so it was great. The biggest thing for me was getting those kids to go, because in downtown LA, we didn't have a lot of space, just a building. So we didn't have a lot of space for recreation. So we partnered up with USC and our students would go down there and, you know, use the swimming pool weekly, the football field, the fitness center, basketball courts, everything. And so every university has camps in the summertime. So they would hire the best kids from where they get paid. And the other students would do volunteer work because they still need community service. And, you know, that was unbelievable. Whenever USC had a big event going on, like the freshman pool party, it's 5,000 students there. And they couldn't even operate it without our students coming down there being so professional, learning, you know, how to act outside. And, you know, I used to always tell my students, I said, listen, I'm taking you up to USC because you may meet your husband, your wife, you know what I'm saying? You just never know when you're in that type of environment right there. And so some of our kids employment with themselves, but their parents also got employment. They came down, you know, talked to me about USC and whatever. I said, hey, so okay, so what? It was a cook and maintenance, you know. I mean, worked there 1 year and their kids go there for free. So, I mean, I was just blown away by it. I love working with the students, you know, giving them those different opportunities. It was just unbelievable. It really was, you know. And so, you know, I'm happy, you know, that I'm able to help the students out. And, you know, I encourage anybody to tell their kids about it, you know, because it, you know, it's a $1.7 billion. Think about it, $1.7 for 125 Job Corps. You know, you can do a lot with helping, you know, restructure our kids' future. You know, you talk about reversing systemic racism. That's what I'm big on right there, and telling people the best way I know how to do that is through Job Corps, because it's 125 of them. You know, you got 300 on this center, 500, you know, what, 5 to 10,000 kids, and you know, that turns into 10 to 50 to 100,000 like that. And it just, it's so great programs, you know. So I'm honored, you know, I'm honored to be, you know, working for a company right now that, you know, I climbed the ranks. I went from manager all the way up to the corporate office, you know. So, you know, I love it. And, you know, I encourage anybody, you know, looking for employment outside of the state right there, you know, Portland and Tucson, for me specifically right there, it just gives you an opportunity, like I said, for the kids and their parents to have that access to that. It's unbelievable. I not in a thousand years where I ever thought that was Job Corps. So that's it for me. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks a lot, D'Anthony. Okay, Professor Roth.
Appreciate what's been said, if I understand correctly. First of all, I want to say thanks, Chris, for the excellent presentation, and thank your brother D'Anthony, former also student. I had the pleasure of having at Cal State Long Beach for his input, and said Sante for all the questions that's been asked. I just have a couple of questions and analysis. When you say that if you got a felony, it's from 16 to 24.
Yep.
My understanding that some youth, I guess it depends on what state you're in, from 16 to 18, you're a youth. And your record, unless you're sentenced to California Youth Authority or something, you can get a felony. Shoplifting, and they call it burglary or whatever, but you're 16,
mm-hmm.
and then and you want to go to the Job Corps. Do they count? I mean, first of all, that record's supposed to be sealed or locked down. But do Job Corps deal with 16 year olds with felonies from 16 to 18?
Well, I'm gonna tell you from experience, kids that apply. From an outreach and admission standpoint, to have any type of information on them like that, mm-hmm. a good outreach and admission counselor would research all that information and see where that student or that potential applicant stands, right? So, mm-hmm. yeah, the judges, there's been situations where judges have leaned towards the Job Corps program when kids are in situations that they can't get out of, right? Mm-hmm. And someone from the Job Corps, like that AC counselor, will go in and speak on behalf of that kid and talk about the program. And there's been situations where things have been reduced to misdemeanors.
But again, a person that, you know, the reason why I'm asking that is that my understanding, juvenile offenses don't count. And when you say 16 and 24, they're not supposed to count them because you go to juvenile, they call it a detention center.
Right.
To determine if you can go to a camp or go to a probation or go to a placement home.
Mm-hmm.
They still have to put that information down. That's my point.
Yeah, they would have to put it down because it's going to be researched and found out anyway through the background check.
Okay, now secondly, do the enrollees have to sign a contract with Job Corps?
A contract, now, it's an agreement, right? It's an agreement saying you're
going to... All contracts are agreements.
Yeah, it's not that kind of agreement though, Raw. You can leave, you know, what you're signing for when you come in, the agreements that you're signing for, that you're not going to like do all these negative things. Remember that career preparation period?
Yeah.
When they come in and management comes in to speak to you,
mm-hmm.
they tell you all the do's and don'ts. Well, actually part of that is security. And when security comes in and speaks to you, they're telling you, hey, we're a drug-free environment. And when I say drug-free, because I just went to a location. I just went to a location. We had that discussion. And when we say drug-free, it's drug-free. And I don't mean if you purchase something in a state where it's legal, right? Because when you come onto a Job Corps campus, there's signs there that says no trespassing, you're entering federal property. So all the legislation that applies to that federal property.
No. What I'm asking is there, when you recruit you, and they agreed to go to Job Corps.
Yep.
There's a code of conduct, I'm pretty sure, and understanding of behavior expectation and rules and regulations. I'm saying that, you know, that type of orientation, as you say, comes from the counselors or whomever as they've been recruited and are they enlisted. But the point is that, you know, there's no, and I'm not looking for a binding contract, but just an agreement, like you said. Okay, now the other question is, what's the attrition rate as far as annually? How many start? How many, how do you track those that have been retained? And then how many drop out?
Well, the dropout rate is, I would say dropout is fairly low. You have to do something because we have a disciplinary process that you have to go through. Right now, you know, I can come back and I can have data for you, so much data for you. Just give me the questions. I can get you all the data. We have a system that tracks all that.
All right. Okay, now, what about your population breakdown from an ethnic standpoint?
Mm-hmm. It depends on what center you go to. Some centers are high in the Anglo-Saxon population. Some centers are low in the African-American. Some are high in Hispanic. It depends.
What I'm saying is they're all under one umbrella.
Yeah.
Is there a breakdown from the standpoint of all of them put together?
Yep.
What ethnic groups or racial groups make up the Job Corps?
Yep.
Regardless of where they are?
Yep. That data is out there. And like I said, we can have a data call. You know, you got my number. You can call me. I can give you.
No. I'm not. I'm just trying to get clarity.
Yeah.
When you say Job Corps, see, when they started it, you know, back in 1964, you know, we was running, you know, it's supposed to stop poverty. It was part of the major war on poverty program. And it was one of the three major three ones. And so when you get to Job Corps, you know, where it's located, as Linda was saying, you know, when they first started out, you know, the whole recruitment concept, because 20% of the population was designated poor in 1964. And that's why they started it, you understand? And so, you know, I'm looking out for Black people. I'm just trying to find out how many Black people in the program nationally, locally, and where is it located? Because when you say it's in Boston and Alabama and then here, but you don't say what city and what area, that throws me off because if it's for poverty program, let me get put like this. I'm in Compton. I grew up in Watts, right? Watts and Compton. I haven't seen a Job Corps office located in the community, even though they say they deal with the community. Yeah. But I'm not saying they ain't something to do it.
Yeah.
Have recruitment stations, but I'm talking about operating with, you know, and functioning locally in the community.
All right. So no.
Well, Chris, let me answer those statistics for you real quick. It's 62% white, 62% white, Hispanic 17%, African American 12%.
Reflection of the population.
Are you looking at national or specific?
No, national.
Okay. All right.
Like okay, in LA, no. LA, it's, you know, it's, I'd say it's 40-40 Hispanics, the African-Americans, and then, you know, you have overseas cuts and Filipinos and Asian population. So it all depends because in Iowa, you know how that's going to be.
All right. Okay, the other question quick, then I'm going to let somebody else come in.
You know, no.
I can do this all day. No, you know, I can do this all day. But just one more question.
Hold on, Ron. I'm gonna get you the national breakdown.
I'm gonna do that. I'm way past that. I'm retired.
I'm gonna get one more question.
Yeah. Out of that $1.7 billion budget, how much is operational versus derivative to the students and to the wealthy? Because you say you have a dorm, you have this, and you have that. Mm. Okay. Now, and are there other supplemental funds that come in? And how much is operational from that standpoint? And how is it distributed?
Okay, you know what? You trying to get me caught up here.
No, I'm asking you a question because let me tell you, I'm for Job Corps. I'm for getting these young people jobs and recommending that. I know a couple of people that went through Job Corps. That's mm-hmm. not it. But I just know that there are a lot of programs take up a lot of operational money. Staff, supplies, office space, all of that. I want to know what percentage went to the operational cost versus the job training. And you know, and things that nature. That's all. But if you got it, do it.
A lot. Hey, Chris, we have an operator on here.
Yeah, I know a lot. I'm about to get to Benji in a minute, but I'm gonna tell you, Rob, the operational cost of it all. It depends where the center is located. You know, as far as the percentage is concerned, and Benji, you can speak towards this because you're an operator. Because when we give the fund, when we give out a $60 million contract per se, right?
But that's not the budget. The budget is how Job Corps operates, not what you spend. It's also, you know, your costs as far as not what you give away as far as contracts is concerned. Right. Because there's a lot of things that go into giving the contract, bid, blah, 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 and all that, and evaluation. Well, I'm asking you the operational cost. How many staff members you have? Do you pay for their health and benefit?
Yeah.
You know, all that type of stuff from a national. Because when they say $1.7 billion, some people think, oh, you're spending all that on young people and training them for jobs? Right. No. What is the operational cost? That's all I'm asking. But, you know, I'm good. I'm not trying to get nobody caught up. These are genuine questions that I would ask anybody, because I'm former city council, former school board.
Yeah.
I know the first thing you ask when you're dealing with a project is the cost factor of operating. That's all.
Right. And Ron, of course, that's a good question, you know, and everything. As far as what percentage of the 1.7 is operational, that's your question, right?
Yeah.
What percentage of the $1.7 billion is operational?
How much of it?
And see, of that, it has to be broken down into every Job Corps program, right? And I don't have an immediate number for you, because the way I don't deal with the 1.7, I just deal with my share of the 1.7. So when I allocate funds out to a contract, they send, well, it's firm fixed price contracting now. So it works a little differently, but I'll be able to tell you that per contract. I couldn't tell you that per $1.7 billion.
Yeah, somebody got to get the milk contract. If you got kids on the dorm, somebody got to get the bologna contract. You know what I mean? Somebody got to get it. But anyway, Benji can give it to us.
Yeah, he got to hit Benji up hard, huh? Now, Benji is an operator in our region, and he has a couple of Job Corps programs. He has the Reggie Acosta program in Tucson, Arizona, and he has the Springdale Pivot program over in Oregon. So from a budgetary standpoint, he can probably speak to what his operation budget is from the funds that he received, if he wants to talk about that.
All right, so we got, before I get to Benji, we got two other people that we got to go to, and then we're going to circle to Benji after that. Yeah. From Brother Mashinda.
Yo, good evening. Yeah, I think my questions were answered. Brother Rob had mentioned about the felonies and so forth. I just want to thank you for the presentation, Brother Shepherd. And I had a couple of brother-in-laws with personal experience. They actually went to Job Corps in their early years and took some construction trades. And it was quite beneficial for them. Both of them, it helped them throughout their life and their career. And they're still very helpful to me with their construction skills with property and things like that. I was interested in that about, back in my juvenile probation days, we've had students who would, probationers that were actually, they went to Job Corps. You know, I had one of them, you know, and again, if I'm not mistaken, one of them did have a felony that was scheduled to go to Job Corps. Anyway, he was killed before he was, before he got off probation, but he was, all that was in the works. So that was back in probably the late 80s where this particular guy was going to go to Job Corps. But anyway, thank you for your service, brother. Y'all have a good evening.
All right, thank you.
All right, thanks, Brother Mashinda. Brother Hembrick.
Evening, Brother Shepherd.
Hey, how you doing?
I don't have a whole lot of questions. I remember I'm a retiree from Centennial. I worked there for about 20 years.
Okay.
Just been retired for 7 years. And I remember when I was in high school, I went to Compton and finished in 71. And what I recall about Job Corps, brothers that went through the courts, they were given an alternative. Either go to jail, the military, or Job Corps. And I don't know if the felony thing applied way back then, but I can see that being a hindrance to some of the ones that really need it. But I can see how it'd be beneficial. They can get out of the environment, housing and all that is taken care of. You know, some of them are real sharp.
Yeah.
Just need the chance. But they got to get away because the pressure is still there as long as they stay in the area.
Yeah.
So at one time, did they accept people that had felonies back in the early days, or do you know?
Back in the early days, I couldn't tell you about back in the early days, but what I do know and what I have witnessed is when you have a good outreach, that mission counselor working with the kid, and going to the court system and speaking for the kid, I have known about judges to reduce charges because this kid was going to Job Corps. If they didn't have a murder or a rape or anything like that, you know, some robbery, things like that, you know. Yeah, I've witnessed that. I've witnessed that.
So, but if the kid already has been given a felony,
mm-hmm.
he has no chance of getting in, he or she.
Well, I wouldn't say they don't have a chance if they have a felony. I think you always have a chance. You just need somebody. You just need a good mouthpiece to go in there and speak with that judge, depending on what the call is on you. You know, whatever that F charge is, you know, it may not be negotiable.
Mm-hmm. All right. Appreciate you. That was it.
Okay.
Linda, I will get with you real soon. I'm going to go ahead and let Mr. Benji speak. Mr. Benji.
Oh, hello, everybody. I just kind of wanted to say hi to everybody. I missed your presentation, Chris, but I did just want to, I don't know where D'Anthony got his statistics from, but I can guarantee you, and I don't hold me to numbers tonight either. I wasn't really prepared with data, but as Chris indicated, that data is available to share. But the overwhelming majority of students that are serving in the Job Corps program are African-American, and even important also, and even the majority of the staff that work in the program are also African-American practitioners. And it does mimic the ethnicity, the breakdowns does sort of kind of mimic the regional location or the centers you take here. I live here in Atlanta, and you're taking the Atlanta region, all of the centers located in Georgia, Alabama, Florida, Mississippi. The African-American population is over 90% of the students are Black kids in this region. And then, you know, San Francisco will have have more diversity by just the function of it being the San Francisco region. Chicago predominantly, most of our centers in the Chicago region and the New York region are homogeneous, serving predominantly Black students. So I think it would be somewhere in the neighborhood of 65% of the kids are African-American. Yeah, that serves the program. And there are some felonies that, a youth could negotiate enrollment into the program. I think a sexual assault, armed robbery, there are some felonies that are, Department of Labor is not as flexible, but, they're individual. And then a lot now depends on when that event happened and when a youth was charged. If they were charged at 16 and now they're 18, and there just seems to be more openness and more flexibility. Good admissions counselor, like Chris said, the admissions counselor will support having the judge reevaluate that conviction, and so there is a lot more flexibility. And so it's best not to discourage a youth, but just present their case and see where they are now. But we're seeing more and more, more flexibility by the Department of Labor and allowing, students with those histories to come into the program. But actually, and also I just kind of wanted to say that all of our data is sort of skewed now with COVID and the, that impacted the Job Corps program like most schools and institutions, universities. And so the data around enrollment numbers and all that is sort of, is skewed. So you can't look at the last 12 months and get a real good solid picture of what's what. And now the program is open again and we're enrolling students and returning back, trying to return back to, the stable years of the program. But the last couple of years just been really unstable. We do have a path moving forward, and it's just exciting to know that we need students, And I don't know, Chris, if there were some, particular questions around, for me as a center operator that I could answer.
Okay. Benji, like I said, Benji's one of the operators in our region. He has, as the Anthony said, two centers. And, he speaks from two sides, an operator standpoint, being in the program for a while, has longevity in the program. I think you worked for two or three contractors, Benji, before you stepped in.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So now, Benji's been in the program for a while. He's also seen some changes take place. The COVID was a big hit, as far as decreasing the numbers of the program. And it's all based on numbers. To the point where we had to rethink our processes from the national and regional office as far as raw the funding is concerned of the program, and then switching over to a firm fixed price contract. There's still a lot of things being figured out with that as well. So there's a lot of variables in there, a lot of moving pieces, a lot of moving parts. But at the same time, we're open for operations and we're looking for kids to get into the program, and that's what's driving the process. The kids are driving the process.
Okay, Linda had a question. Linda?
Oh, yes, I do. I want to shift gears just a little bit. And I wanted to ask about the young mothers, because you said your age range is 16 to 24, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you have young mothers, is there a policy or programs in place for the mothers?
Yeah, some of the centers have child care centers there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you get to, drop your son or daughter off right at the child care center while you're going about your day and walk right over to the Job Corps program, And that's for a non-residential standpoint. From a residential standpoint, I think some centers have family centers. I think Oneonta in New York had a family dorm. I know the one in Alaska had a family dorm.
because they had the child care centers there. So, you know, there are some options there too.
Well, also, do you have programs in place like Planned Parenthood and tutoring and all type of other programs?
Yeah. Those programs are available either at the center or through one of the community resources.
You know, when I mentioned that the Anthony's data was really just based on the last 6 months of enrollment, I think, Chris, this is a really important point, because coming back post-COVID, you're seeing more white kids enrolling into the program. But historically, the program has really served more Black kids. So I think so the data, the most current data, is just reflective of the past 6 months, and you're seeing higher numbers of white kids coming back into the program. But that speaks to, you know, some of the cultural challenges that are within, you know, that's within our group, and just some of the concerns that are expressing itself as we, you know, those kids were just kind of out there in the middle of COVID for, you know, 2 years. And I think that's concerning that as we ramp back up, we're seeing, you know, less numbers of African-American kids. So it would mean we have to just really be more focused in our outreach efforts to that population, because that number, the 62% of white youth, is definitely higher than it has been historically.
And what I'm going to do, because Rob brought it up, what I'm going to do is I signed off my work computer. I don't want to sign back on because I'm at home. But tomorrow when I sign on, that's the first data I'm going to pull up for the nation, the national data, and check out that breakdown. See how far it goes.
Looking at those statistics right there, basically for me, I always thought the Job Corps was really like 50-50. 44.
Well, it used to. We were 60.
Yeah. Okay. It was 60. So I had a cousin that was up there, you know, and the challenges, and, you know, rather than, it was difficult for students to stick it out and stay in the dormitory, you know, for almost 2 years. And, you know, for a while, they couldn't leave the center, you know, when COVID really went crazy, they couldn't leave. So my cousin, you know, she started working at McDonald's, making $15, $16 an hour. And, you know, she said, oh, uncle, I'm doing great. I'm just like, no. I mean, that time really bothered us right there to lose those students like that, because we lost a lot of them for sure.
Yeah. The exit rate was varying at that time. And the reason why they were exiting, it wasn't like they were getting terminated. You know, some was just, you know, just walking out. But, you know, things have changed. You know, the tide has turned a little bit. We just need to keep pushing forward and getting these kids back into the program. That's a must. But, you know, like you point out, Benji, that ethnic breakout, like I was telling Law, it depends on where you're at in the country. That's going to determine your percentage of population that's attending your program. One, two, of that $1.7 billion, how much of that is operational? That will come down to each, you know, contract, because all the contracts vary in their awards. So there's a lot more to it to break it all down than just to give it, you know, a quick analysis. You know, I learned to be grassroots from you, Raw. So, you know, I got to look at the grassroots of it all. Can't shoot anything out there, my friend. You know that.
I got another quick question, if I could. Would you have any statistical information on the number of African American kids that are recruited or that get in the program are like from group homes, foster homes? Because, you know, from working, you know, the place I worked over the 20-year period, I remember I did a study at Centennial, and in 94, 74% of the Black population were not with either parent. Grandma, grandpa, group home, foster home, that sort of thing. And, you know, there's a lot of program stuff for those kids that they don't take advantage of.
Yeah.
I'm curious to know Do you guys do any recruitment in that area? Do you have business on those type of areas at the end of the program?
Yes, we do. Definitely.
Appreciate that.
And that data is kept when the student is recruited with an outreach and admission counselor. You know, they're resourcing that information, identifying, you know, what program, if you're in a program that applicant came in or how that applicant came in. So that information is being identified for sure.
Also, I don't know if this was answered or not. I think Brother Ra asked the question. Is there an office in the LA area for kids here?
Yeah, there's a couple of them. You have the Los Angeles Job Corps. You have the Long Beach Job Corps, mainly covering the Los Angeles area. Those two right there.
And Inland is somewhere in the Southern California region. Yeah, Inland.
Well, Inland is further east. It's further east. So, you know, you're looking at Sharon, Riverside out that way for the most part.
That's where the majority of Black school age kids are now anyway.
Like I'm telling you, like I was saying earlier, man, I just don't understand sometimes what operators are doing about recruitment. I don't understand it sometimes because like I said earlier, I can get 5 kids from everybody on this call. At least 3 of those kids are going to join.
But you know, Chris, our kids went to work, you know, and that work was not sustainable careers. That work didn't offer them what they're going to get by completing a trade and a credential in high school. But nevertheless, when we closed the program and they went, you know, virtual, so many of them went to work. And although it may have been minimum wage jobs or whatever for them, it's revenue. And so recruiting to selling the program, having them, you know, it's time you to leave McDonald's or leave Walmart and come and get a sustainable career, get on a career path where we're really having to, you know, sell the program because now we're recruiting them from their jobs and their economies and their income, no matter what, how big or small that is, still money. So our kids were having to say, hey, this is a better offering, you know, and then they couldn't stay when they were staying on the Job Corps campuses. But once they went home, the program closed, a lot of their family support systems, whether it was their aunts or mothers or whatever, said, hey, you got to contribute to the general welfare of this house. You got to go get a job. So that made virtual learning very challenging for them. You know, they're at home all day where they've been at Job Corps in a self-sustaining community and lived in the dormitories on our campuses. And so once they went home virtual for over a year, their families was like, hey, you can't eat everything in this refrigerator. You're going to have to contribute to the general welfare. And that necessitated many of them being forced to go to work. Now it's time to come back to Job Corps. And it's like, I don't want to leave my job, you know? And so there are just those kinds of, you know, complexities and nuances that we're having to sort out.
Yeah, and see, I can understand your approach from an operational standpoint, from a community standpoint, and from acting as if I'm recruiting for a college in the high school programs and bringing the kids up to the center to tour. To bring the kids up to the center to tour the program while they're still in high school and attending high school. Because there's only going to be a certain percentage of those kids that are going to be attending any type of college or university. There's only a certain percentage, specifically our population. So I'm speaking of the ones that are still in high school, because that's where your future is going to come into the program. Now, if you're trying to recruit some kids that are working, that are doing things, that are contributing to their family, yeah, that's a whole nother dynamic. They're old enough to make a decision on what they want to do and make it happen as it's comfortable for them, because they're working with a different psyche now. But the kids that are just coming up through the process, right, that needs direction, that right, needs opportunity, those right, kids are still in school.
Right.
In the population that we attend to, like I said, they are not. They, you know, if they got 100 kids, I doubt if 10% are going to go to some vocational or college program or military. I doubt if that's 10%. So that's a whole another 90%+ that's eligible for our program. And that's, I'm speaking from that standpoint. I understand. I hear you. You know, I hear you. I understand the standpoint from kids leaving the program that's already been in the program. See, and I think we need to switch the focus.
In new markets, yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's happening on all levels. I don't even think that's happening at all. Like people, I talk to contractors, and they tell me they have relationships with high schools, and sometimes I ask them to name them. You know, it's hard for them to name too.
Okay, so DeAnthony, this is what DeAnthony shared with us. This is the information that he got. So it looks like, I guess, that the average employee at Job Corps makes $33,000 per year. And this is information from July 2022. And for young folks, I guess $33,000 is not that bad. Since it's the average, that means some of them make above that. And I'm wondering if this is information that's from
employees, not trainees.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, the average employee. Okay. Thanks for that correction, Professor Rob.
I have a quick question.
Go ahead. Go ahead, Rob.
When you say 16 to 24, when you get to the age bracket, and you know that, I mean, what is the target area? I mean, I know high school is one of them, dropouts and people that need a GED or something like that, you know, that's clean record, of course. But when you reach 18, mm-hmm, and you declare your independence, so your financial thing be based on what you earn, and as long as, and I don't know how in-depth Job Corps going to a kid to see if their parents are claiming them, and if that is factored in. I mean, if they say they independent, they got to be either homeless or living somewhere where they're not being declared. And you know, I don't know if y'all go into income taxes, go into their social security to see what's happening. And that's one question. The other question is, you know, when as I said, that what is the age breakdown, not just the ethnic breakdown? Because see, when what Benji was saying was very important, because the jobs, they're paying better at McDonald's now.
Mm-hmm.
They're even offering educational opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
And McDonald's, Starbucks, all those places need employees. Amazon is hiring young people all over the place. And so that may affect Job Corps recruiting. I'm not sure if it is. But after that pandemic, you see job openings all over the place, especially in food services and fast foods and things of this nature. But they're paying better salaries. And even offering benefits because they need employees at the major places. Now the little places don't, but you know, it's a different job market out there. And even that's what Biden be talking about. Look at it, 3% unemployment now. You know, so maybe that would be the issue.
Well, you know, competition. Competition, you know, you're not a stand-up program, you know, things are taking place around you that are changing. So, you know, you have decisions to make. And that's why, you know, my approach would be, if I was an operator, I would focus on high schools, you know, because, you know, you're trying to build a future, right? And the conversation's a little different with the high school teams versus someone who's been in the program, who left the program, has to work and contribute to the family now, you see.
depending on their makeup, the community makeup, where they're living, you know, some determinations have to be made. And that's why I say, well, the focus would be on the high schools, would be the eligible kids in the high school. Now, as far as the disparity is concerned, as far as 16 to 24, you know, the kids that are 18 above, that the kids are out of high school, 18 and above, up to 24, you know, they may have some objectives already set in mind that they want to do, you see. But if you, it's kind of like reaching them a little earlier before they come up with their objectives, you know, you can start planting those seeds and they can start understanding those opportunities and see how the program, they can benefit from the program and a program can benefit from them, you know. So I talked about those advanced career training programs. I talked about the advanced training programs, you know, that the job, that the program presents to the applicants, to the students when they become students. So there's some decisions that have to be made, you know, just like everything else, just like everything else. But that's a good disparity question to see, you know, what the competition, what we're up against, and the social dynamics, like you said, you know, are definitely displaying that, because a lot of other companies are hiring, and not only are they hiring, one of the national office goals is to partner with organizations like this. So those things can take place. Hey, you can come set up your training program with us. What are you training in? If you're training in, I don't know, x-ray technician, well, you can set that up with us. We just need you to hire 5 kids every 5 months or something. I don't know. Whatever the MOU says, you know, so you partner with organizations that do that, that are doing x-ray tech and they're training the kids, they're going to come in doing exactly what you train them to do. You see, so they're looking to partner like that on regional and national levels.
And that sense of urgency for us to be creative and innovative, Chris, I hear you loud and clear on that. And especially, you know, you got all these challenges. They just dictate a different level of, you know, creativity and imagination and collaboration. And I think we're getting there and trying to, you know, we don't move as fast as labor wants us to move, but we do understand the sense of urgency and why that's important to outcompete these demands. I mean, I was in Oregon, and last time I was in Oregon, I took a picture because the wage at McDonald's was $20 an hour. You know, and that was in, you know, Oregon, you know, that was in Tritedale.
Right.
So that's what we're, and you're absolutely right. We got to go with the youth who haven't gone out there in the marketplace. Mm-hmm. And because another thing that I'm learning as I ask my outreach and admissions enrollment services team is I question them. And I wasn't even aware of this until really just a week or so ago, that the kids, now that they're working, a lot of them are not income eligible. Before the pandemic and before, you know, all these wages at McDonald's and Amazon and all that, now they're working. And so many who are eligible, who would typically, to your question about eligibility and income eligibility and, you know, how all that plays itself out, most of our applicants were, you know, parent dependent. So, mm-hmm. They were income eligible because they reported no income. Now, as an individual, as a 19-year-old, 18-year-old, 17-year-old, they're reporting income, and it doesn't take a lot of income to throw them outside of eligibility. And that's kind of rearing its head, that we have students who need the program, should be in the program, but because they've been working with these high wage $18 an hour job at McDonald's and Amazon and Walmart and whatever, now they're not even qualifying from an income standpoint because they're reporting individual income as opposed to no income. So that's another layer of sort of complexity that we're having to just find answers to.
So with that being said, where is the community we probably have our best chances of recruiting from?
To your point, the high school programs and students that are not, absolutely.
You see, that's the whole thing. You know, the ones that have financially taken themselves out of the picture or otherwise, you know, they're still going to be there. You know, they're still going to be there. And if something comes up, they know about the program. They know. It's like I used to raise roller pigeons, right?
they always come back to the cage. You know, they always come back to the cage. So you know, I'm saying these kids that get out there, you know, that they more than likely, if things get rough and tough and dangerous for them, you know, as far as trying to make it concerned, they're going to be talking to that mission counselor because they already been through the program. They know what questions to ask.
Yeah, you have to clip their wings, keep them in the cage, and feed them. Then they come back.
But now they got to wait to another tax year because if they exceed the income threshold, they can't get in until they, you know, go into a non-revenue status.
Well, there's enough homeless kids out there. I mean, you know, they're youth out there, but the population shift in urban areas is enormous with the influx of immigration. And, you know, but when you say you have to be a United States citizen, that leaves a lot of them out until they get processed. And, but at the same time, you know, the African-American youth, like you say, going to Job Corps for 7 months, 8 months, like going to jail to them, being with the restrictions and, you know, probably no smoking, no drinking, no nothing. You know what I mean?
Hey,
I'm free. I'm free to get high. You know.
Look, I remember one of your classes where you were talking about, you know, Crips and Bloods were real hot back then, and they couldn't sit in the red chair. This dude didn't want to sit in the blue chair. You know, yeah. I feel like I'm locked up in here. You know, you gave us that whole scenario, some kids you was working with.
Yeah.
Job Corps, you see, they may come in with that conduct sometimes. And D'Anthony probably can speak to this. They may come in with that conduct sometimes. But if they don't connect with the right person, they're going to continue that conduct until they can get with somebody who they can trust. And you know the deal. Until they get with somebody who they can listen to that's talking their language and trying to, you know, redirect them. You're right. That's what they're going to think. And that's
well, we program a whole lot of that out of them. We can program a lot of that out of most of them.
The thing is, you got to have a right staff member do it. If you don't have a right staff, they see right through it. They see right through it because that's what they do. That's what they do. They see right through things.
And
they
a lot of that is done during social development, student government, recreational activity programs, art, music, you know, finding different connections with the kids because you're able, especially this in the dormitories, like, you know, you have a few hundred kids that's in the dormitory and, you know, on every day on a recreation standpoint, you're going to deal with 50 of them, you know, in a weight room, swimming, playing cards or whatever, you know, a study hall, tutor, whatever, you know, you're going to deal with them. And that's when you really make those connections with those students right there. And having great staff is so important. When you have people that just really care, they're going to go above and beyond to make sure those kids are, you know, like, because really there's 24 hours a day that those kids might need attention to. You know, you just never know when they're going to reach out to you, you know, and you have to be there for them. You know, you have to have somebody right there, if not a phone call away from them, to talk to. So, you know, it's, you know, recreation and student government really drives the program up there. As far as jobs, after school programs, work-based learning right there. So like doing career prep, their first week they come out, you know, I would take them down, I make them get dressed up, and we would go all the way through downtown LA. And we would go to the Staples Center. We would go to the Ritz-Carlton. We would go to the Yard House. And we would mimic trying to get jobs on the spur of the moment, just like that. And just showing them, it's like, look, this is everything right here. So when you go above and beyond for kids mm-hmm. like that, they notice, and you notice, okay, all of a sudden, they're going to, you know, come into your office a little more. Hey, what other programs do you guys have? You know, and then you kind of, like Benji say, you know, we can program them to do that. That's how I did it through our programs over there.
Yeah,
you put you know, we give them heavy doses of love, heavy doses of accountability and structure and exposure. So many of them just, you know, that that love will break them down. They'll change. If they're in a company of staff who really care and you got clearly defined expectations and accountability, you can't come in here running. We know we're here to build you up, but you know, a lot of love and a lot of accountability works.
Can I ask another quick question? Let's say, I don't know how many years it takes for a kid to complete the program before he can get in the workforce. But my question is, if a kid, let's say he's 22 when it comes in, cutoff age is 24, still has not exceeded completing the program. Are they allowed an extended period of time so they can?
Yeah. You can come in at 24, right? You can go out at 26. Your baseline is 2 years, right? And once you get your 2 years in, are you going to that advanced career training program? Are you going to that advanced training program? So you have some options right there. Are you going to go into your career after that? So you get your base years to get it all together, but you just don't want to waste that time. You know, that's why it's good to reach them early and explain the process to them, because in the long run, they have more opportunities. And that's what you want them to have, more opportunities.
Okay. So listen, we're coming up on about an hour and 45 minutes. And this is all good dialogue, excellent program. As far as I could see, we had I don't know if this person was on before, but I want to give that one person the opportunity to ask a question or make a comment. So the person that's on the iPhone, do you have a question or a comment for the three gentlemen that's here representing the Job Corps? Hello? Your volume is not. So, okay. So, Brother Chris, this conversation is extending.
Mm-hmm.
You want to do a part two?
Give me a call, man. We can talk about it.
Okay. Because, no, it's very interesting. And it's definitely a viable program that can help a lot of youth. So, this is what we're about, giving this information and having people access it, and they could dearly use this.
Yeah, give me a call. We can work it out and make it happen.
Okay, so the iPhone person. I can hear you now.
Oh, my man. I'm driving, brother, and I'm listening. I know the gentleman that's on the call, man. Hey, brothers, how y'all doing, man?
All right.
Right on, man. Right on, Chris. Right on, Langston. I don't have much, man. I want to get involved in the discussion. If I can, just add one thing, and I think just listening. One of the things I would say is with respect to the statement made about who we're up against when we're talking about Job Corps and who the students are up against and who we're up against as an operation and reaching these students, reaching these young people and getting them to understand the importance of the career stuff and developing themselves. So we're talking about jobs out there that are paying young people $20 an hour. And we have to start really, really thinking about how do we get to the young person and getting them to understand, are they looking for the microwave career, that money that they want to put in their hands right now? Or are we looking for something that would have a lasting effect and that's related to their development overall, that's going to take them through the next step? I mean, yeah, they can go and get the quick Starbucks job or the McDonald's job or what have you, But how do we get to the young person and get them to understand the longevity and the journey and building themselves and building their skills and all that? So I think that's where we really got to attack that part when we're talking about building up the Job Corps program and getting the right kind of participants in the program and really making it sexy, really making it sexy to the kids. Job Corps kind of got kind of not so sexy because they're looking at wanting to see other things and you know, things are kind of still antiquated a bit, but at the end of the day, it's the best thing going for a lot of our kids. We have to convince them of that.
Look, Nakawa, let me tell you.
Is that who that was?
It sounds like Nakawa to me.
That's me.
Yeah,
that sounds good.
Let me tell you, man. That's why I said you got to get them in high school because, see, you can tour them up to the location. They may not be wanting to go, but, you know, that's data gathered. You know, hey, what's going on? Why don't you want to join the program? What are we not doing to satisfy your need? What do you need in order for you to come in this direction? You know, there's going to be clusters of kids with those same type of aspects that has to be answered. You know, it's going to be a variable, of course. But if you don't have nothing to relate all those variables to, you don't have nobody touring, you don't have anybody coming up, you don't have nothing from nothing is going to leave you exactly that. But if you got those kids, man, they're still in high school, the seeds are beginning to be planted, they're beginning to take root, you want to be a part of that process. You know, if you have a vision for a year, plant wheat. If you got a vision for 5 years, you plant something else, but a lifetime, you got to plant people. You know, 10 years, you plant trees, a lifetime, you got to plant people. So we got to get these people in the process because this vision is for a lifetime. It's not for 5 or 10 years. And it's to your point, Nakawa. That's why I say you got to get them in high school. You got to tour that. That's your high school. Every high school belongs to Job Corps, how I see it. Okay? That's why, because we're catering to those kids. They're here to get their high school diploma. Some of the school programs are changing into having some vocational skills training in their school. They're doing that in the school, the schools that can afford it, right? But the ones that can't afford it, you know, that's where Job Corps comes in at, you know, and say, hey, we got it for you right here. You know, don't give up. We have a whole program assessment guide that's going to get you through the process. We got people that's going to be looking out after you. They have to be dedicated people. We got people who's going to take care of you. They have to be dedicated people. And you just need that mentor. When we talk about mentors, That needs to really happen. You know, not just with the
right.
You know, we got to have that with other staff members as well that's embedded into the process. We have this thing called I talked about it a little bit, the MyPace program and the PAR, right? It puts all the staff members on the center on the same page with one kid. So that kid should have plenty of mentors around them, plenty. So we have a process. We need to execute it to the degree that it is being successful. And it's going to take people, good people, to do that with the right approaches. So to your point, Nakawa.
The average age.
Right on, right on, brother.
The average age from a community college is 33 years old. When a kid come out of high school, sometimes they don't know what direction they're going to go in. And right. It depends on their economic situation. If they can go to community college and get financial aid, you know, and be out and do the thing. You have to compete with that faction. Then you have to compete with those that want to help their mama, if she's a single parent, or repay their grandparents or whoever they stand with. So they go out and get a job. I know I worked 2 and 3 jobs to help my family. I didn't want to, but I just felt like it. I went and got 2 or 3 PhDs, but I had to work, you know, and then you forget. Sometimes a lot of these kids are having kids at an early age and they have to get some money to try to take care of their children and stuff. So each kid is different. Each situation is different. That's the only point I'm trying to make. But I agree with the brother on the phone. You got to make it attractive. And I think one of the ways is to say, look, you go to community college, it takes the average student 5 years to get a 2-year degree, 8 years to get a 4-year degree. So, you know, you say, hey, look, here you can come to Job Corps and then 7 months, you can get a certificate, or you can, or in a year, a couple of years, you can get a certificate, and you don't have the academic stress that's put on you with GE requirements and math requirements and all those type of things. But when you say they got to get OSHA approved, you know, I mean, that's a whole new different ball game.
That's,
you know,
Rob, that's one of the certifications, right? That's just one of the certifications, and they study for that, and they go through the process. They don't have to get it. It's just, if they get it, if they're in a particular,
you're going to go in construction.
Well, yeah, so I'm saying if they're in a particular career technical training program, yeah, that's just going to be a part of the process. But again, the point is they have the resources there to help them through that process. It's not like they have evening, weekend study programs. They have tutoring programs. It's embedded. It's everything that one would need to be successful can be in one place.
It's all, inclusive. All inclusive.
Okay. Well, brothers, this has been very informative, good dialogue. And look, we want to get all of you back and do it again so we can elaborate and you know, some more questions can be asked. But I think by, you know, all of the participation, we came up with some strategies for you, Chris. So, you know, and Rob mentioning the junior college and the requirements for classes versus 7 months, you know, those are good little, you know, pointers there. So this has been excellent.
For the expert subject matter, Chris, today, to have Benji and have Nakawa, me, I'm rudimentary compared to those guys right there, to, you know, talking about Job Corps and spreading that word. And it's like, this is going to be available online. So it's great, man. It was really big, very informative, man. I'm sure everybody had a great time, and they're going to take that and try to get involved with Job Corps.
That's right. Well, I'm an advocate, that's for sure.
Yeah. So, well, Rico, I know we talked about presenting to your class at school using technology. You know, that'll be an interesting thing because those kids are still in school, right?
Yes.
So this can be kind of like a segue into that and speak to them directly in the classroom, and you see what kind of data we get, our acceptance we get, or what kind of questions we get to see what they need in order to be a part of the program. That's key.
Let's work on that.
Keep me posted, man.
Yes, sir. So appreciate everything, folks. Professor Rob.
Yeah.
Who we got Monday?
Reverend Smart. He's president of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. We're going to be talking about that racism at Los Angeles City Hall with Dejan, the Latinos that won't resign, and the union and all that. Reverend Smart marched with Martin Luther King. He's well known in Los Angeles for his activism and just a great brother. So he's going to be one of the presenters Monday.
That's beautiful. I'll
get you the information so we can put it up. I'll get it from him tomorrow.
Okay, so next week.
We got our website, Southern Christian Leadership Conference.
Okay, excellent. I'm looking forward to that. And then next week, on Wednesday, we got Dr. B. And he's been on about three times. And the topic is Counseling Kanye, Obedient Outrage in the Black Community. So that's going to be interesting. Yeah, because DeAnthony and I talked about a little bit about Kanye before this show. So, okay, folks. Well, Chris, thanks a lot. Benji, the other brother on the iPhone.
Nakawa.
Nakawa. Thanks, you.
Nakawa. Thank you, brother.
Nakawa was my boss at LA Job Corps. He was a director down there.
Okay, wonderful. We want to get him back on. We want to get Benji back on. We want to get everybody back on. Excellent. Okay, Professor Ra and Brother Hembrick. So each one teach one in Conscious Corner.
All right. Two times.
Everybody have a good evening.
Good seeing you, hearing you and seeing you, DeAnthony, and Y'all stay strong. Stay black.
Absolutely. Appreciate you.
Absolutely. Black people rise. All right.
All right, everybody. Good night.
Hey, Ron, I'm going to get that data.